This is Deborah Roberts. Welcome to the 2020 True Crime Vault. Each week, we reach back into our archives and bring you a story we found unforgettable.
Only a true psychopath could do this.
Pool of blood coming from his head.
Somebody had been paid to kill me.
Why would you want your husband killed?
Take a listen.
Coming up,
Kathleen Durst, a beautiful medical student, married to the ideal husband.
She was swept off her feet. She viewed him as her Prince Charming.
Robert Durst, the son of a New York real estate mogul. But was Kathy's life with him all that it seemed?
She had showed me bruises on her arm.
Bobby is going out of control.
Then one night, Kathy Durst vanishes.
The last conversation that I had with Kathy, she turned to me and said, "Promise me, if something happens to me, you'll check it out. I'm afraid of what Bobby might do."
Had she abandoned a troubled marriage, or was she dead?
I said, "Oh my God, something bad happened to Kathy."
Beautiful, married, and missing. I'm John Quiñones. When Kathy McCormick, a middle-class suburban girl, married Robert Durst, a Manhattan millionaire and heir to a real estate fortune, it seemed she was bound for a perfect, privileged life. There were city apartments and a country cottage and seemingly everything she wanted. But her happiness didn't last, and her friends thought they knew why. Robert Durst had a dark side, and when Kathy suddenly vanished in 1982, they suspected he killed her. But all they had were their suspicions. As Cynthia McFadden first reported in 2001, little did they know another potential clue would come 18 years later and 3,000 miles away with another woman once closely tied to Robert Durst.
It was December 25th in Los Angeles. Susan Berman, a 55-year-old author and would-be screenwriter, had failed to show up for a Christmas party.
And her cousin called to ask why she wasn't at the party. And a homicide detective answered the phone.
Berman's body had been found on Christmas Eve at her rented bungalow at Benedict Canyon. Her dog's incessant barking had alerted the neighbor. They found the back door open.
When it really happens in your life, nobody wants to say it. Nobody wanted to say the word murder.
Julie Smith is a popular mystery writer and an executor of Berman's estate.
Did you immediately think who might have done this?
No, I didn't. Even though I write detective novels, that I found something I didn't know. That isn't where your mind goes when a friend of yours is killed.
Where does it go?
You think about, what did she feel? Did she see the person? Was she afraid? Did she experience fear?
There may have been no time for fear. Susan Berman's was no ordinary murder, rather an execution, a single bullet to the back of her head. It looked like a mob hit, which wasn't actually so far-fetched, because Berman was the daughter of a powerful Las Vegas mobster.
Susan Berman wasn't just killed. I mean, it was execution.
Her death is a very questionable death, not just in terms of the fact that it was a homicide, but the timing is extremely curious.
Curious because Susan Berman was murdered just before District Attorney Pirro had intended to question her about another mystery, the disappearance 20 years earlier of the beautiful young medical student named Kathleen Durst.
This case in particular is an unusual case. The facts and circumstances, I believe, cry out for a review.
It was January 1982 when Kathy Durst vanished. According to her husband, Robert Durst, who belongs to a prominent New York real estate family, she was last seen boarding a train.
Because you had a vibrant woman who was in medical school, who had everything to live for, who suddenly disappears off the face of the earth. It made absolutely no sense.
The mystery lingered until a man was arrested in an unrelated case. He said he had information on Kathy Durst. More on that later. The state police were troubled when they reopened the Durst files, and even more so when Susan Berman suddenly showed up dead. Then the cold case of Kathy Durst became very hot indeed. Had Susan Berman been silenced? As it turns out, she had been a close friend and confidant of Robert Durst.
And we are aware of the fact that they had communicated very recently before her death.
And do you think that her death is related in some way to this investigation?
There's no way that I can say that yet.
But you haven't ruled it out.
Haven't ruled it in, haven't ruled it out.
In 1972, when Robert Durst and Kathleen McCormick were married, the future had seemed bright. Kathy's best friend, Gilberta Najami.
She was in love with her husband, Bob, and I could see on her face, she would light up. She was in love with him.
She viewed him as her Prince Charming.
Kathy's older brother, Jim McCormick.
It's kind of like she was living almost like the American dream of being in love and hitting a home run, I guess.
And Robert Durst certainly looked like a home run, the eldest son of a real estate developer, Seymour Durst, whose family's company, the Durst Organization, then owned $500 million worth of Manhattan properties.
Describe to me Bob Durst. What was he like back then?
It was a hard-to-read kind of personality. And I took it as being shy around other people.
In ways, they were polar opposites. Kathy, the pretty, upbeat, and outgoing middle-class Long Island girl. Robert, the reserved rich boy whose mother committed suicide when he was only 6.
What do you think your sister saw in him?
She was 19 years old. I thought she was swept off her feet by the aura of the world he was in. Like, she was going places and doing things and clubbing and all of that stuff that, you know, it's a very seductive world.
She was 19, he was 27. Soon, they were part of the New York club scene, Studio 54, Xenon, the Copacabana.
We went out a lot. We went dancing, partied, some drugs, alcohol. You know, just like everyone in the 70s, the early 80s.
Kathy's close friend, Kathy Traceman.
Was Kathy a party girl, would you say?
To a certain extent. She liked to have a good time.
Back then, it was kind of, you know, this kid in Candyland. Here I am in Manhattan, and there's all these rich and famous people, and oh boy. And Sue Berman was one of those people.
The same Susan Berman found murdered.
She was very upfront about the fact that her father was in the mob.
She traded off it. That was her career.
She wrote books spun from memories of a childhood spent in Las Vegas at the Flamingo Hotel, the daughter of the late Davy Berman, who ran the casinos under the legendary Bugsy Siegel.
I believe she was 14 when her father died, and her mother had died at about the same time, and she felt bereft for having no family, and she collected a group of very loyal friends who stayed with her all the time I've known her.
The mobster's daughter was close to both Kathy and Bob Durst, but Berman had gone to college with Bob, and when she got married, Bob was the one who gave her away.
She talked about him like a brother, really.
I mean, they were close.
They were very close.
Not boyfriend-girlfriend close.
Never.
What was it about him that so appealed to her, do you think?
He worshipped Susan. He adored her. On the occasions that I've met him, I had the impression of a very withdrawn person, extremely withdrawn. Susan was very exuberant, and she could definitely bring you out of yourself.
She was exotic.
She was exotic. Yeah, she was very exotic.
Kathy Durst was also an exuberant, vivacious woman, and it may have been part of why Robert was drawn to her. But by the mid-1970s, only a few years into their marriage, friends and family say something changed Bob and Kathy's relationship forever.
She wanted to have family because she came from a family, and it was like part of her character. But when she did get pregnant, she was so proud, he forced her to have an abortion.
Forced her?
Yeah. It was like, you got no choice.
And the reason was because Bobby told her
that he did not want the responsibility of children.
Eleanor Schwenk, another member of Kathy's inner circle.
She came from a large Irish Catholic family. So he was denying her her essence, you know, something that was very important to her.
And she was so devastated by that, I can remember. So she redirected her energy and her life force. She went to, she started going to school at Western Connecticut State College. She got her 4-year degree in nursing.
That was 1978. After 6 years of marriage, her friends say that Catholic girl denied motherhood was plunging ahead to compensate with a career of her own. Kathy Durst had even decided to go on to medical school and become a doctor.
She said to me, you know, Jim, I'm going to be the first Durst to be an MD, a doctor. And I looked at her, I said, why is that such a thing? She goes, because in Jewish families, that's an honor. And she was so happy to be giving honor at that time to the Durst name, which unfortunately, you know, didn't happen.
When we come back, a marriage falls apart.
Came in and grabbed Kathy by the hair, started pulling her.
She had showed me bruises on her arm that she said that he had caused.
And Kathy's final word.
She turned to me and said, Gilberta, promise me, if something happens to me, you'll check it out. I'm afraid of what Bobby might do.
Stay with us.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you'd do with an extra hour in your day? Would you go for a run, take a nap, read a book, or maybe show up for a friend? We often find ourselves wishing for more time, but the real question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The key to squeezing that special thing into your schedule is knowing what's truly important to you and making it a priority. That's where therapy comes in. It's not just about dealing with problems, it's about finding what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you've tried therapy, you know how beneficial it can be. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's a tool for learning positive coping skills, setting boundaries, and empowering yourself to be the best version of you. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. And the best part? You can switch therapists at any time at no additional charge. So whether it's finding that extra hour for yourself or embarking on a journey of self-discovery, therapy can be a game changer. Take the first step with BetterHelp and make your mental health a priority. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/2020. That's the numbers 2020 to get 10% off your first month. Again, BetterHelp, HELP.com/2020.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
After 6 years of marriage, there was growing tension between Kathy Durst, a lively and ambitious young woman, and her husband, Robert, the introverted heir to a New York real estate fortune. Kathy's family and friends thought the cause was her decision to become a doctor and her increasing independence. Once again, Cynthia McFadden.
I sometimes felt that maybe he resented her going back to school and becoming her own person.
Like Kathy, Dr. Marion Watlington was a nurse who went on to medical school.
He was the kind of man that wanted her to be under his control and do exactly what he said.
Kathy's friend Gilberta Najamie says that Bob Durst's need to control his wife was about to erupt.
Since Kathy's disappearance, in conversations with all of the friends, it's become painfully clear that there was violence early in the relationship. I was never a witness to it, but I was always one of many that Kathy would call, relaying the violence, the arguments, the slapping.
The only time I personally witnessed a violent act was at my mom's house, and Bob wanted to go. You know, he had enough of the family thing because he was never really into it. And came in and grabbed Kathy by the hair, started pulling her out of the room by the hair.
By 1980, her family and friends say Kathy was telling them that Bob's violence was escalating.
After one beating, she called, and I said to her, you've got to go and get yourself, you know, photographed, and just in case you need this kind of evidence.
It seems she never took those photos. She certainly never filed a complaint against him. But her family and friends say that by 1981, Kathy and Bob were spending more and more time in two separate apartments in New York City. He in a penthouse on Riverside Drive. She often stayed in a flat on East 86th Street, both in buildings owned by the Durst organization.
Oftentimes, she would ask me to drive into the city to stay with her at her apartment because she was in fear. She didn't know what was going to happen next.
Towards the end, I mean, she, you know, had showed me bruises on her arm that she said that he had caused.
A year before Kathy's disappearance, what her friends now believe was Bob Durst's simmering violence came out in the open. Kathy, Gilberta, and a group of friends, including a photographer named Peter Schwartz, had gone out for a night on the town. Later, they returned to Kathy's 86th Street apartment.
When we got there, Kathy and Peter weren't with us, and Bob got very angry, and we stayed there a short time, and when we got back, Bob ended up kicking Peter in the face.
Durst had broken a bone into Schwartz's right eye. Peter Schwartz received a cash settlement in a civil suit, and eventually, criminal charges were dropped against Robert Durst.
Kathy was upset. She was very angry that Bob had manipulated his way out of the consequences.
For the first time after 8 years of marriage, her friends say, Kathy Durst began talking about divorce.
Kathy had made it known to Bob that she was going to try and get a settlement, a financial settlement from him, and he would have been out of the picture completely.
She hired a lawyer at Milbank Tweed, a high-powered Wall Street law firm, and started collecting financial papers.
We went through Bob's desks, and we got tax returns and other things that Kathy thought would be pertinent.
I think she was so convinced that she was going to be able to manage herself out of the problem with 3 months to go with graduation and to get on with her life independent of this obviously failed relationship with Bob.
Was I egging her on to divorce him? Yes. Did I think she deserved a settlement? Yes. Did I think it was going to end in her demise? Not until it was too late.
But there may have been a clear warning just 3 weeks before Kathy vanished when her friends say her husband hit her severely enough that she went to the emergency room. Sources say hospital records show that on January 6, 1982, Kathy Durst sought medical treatment at Jacoby Hospital for injuries to her face and head. Friends and family say that Kathy told them the bruises were the result of a fight with her husband at 3 a.m. the night before. A fight, they say she told them, about how much money she wanted if they divorced.
And there was considerable money. Remember, Robert Durst's family owned a good chunk of the Manhattan skyline. For his part, Robert Durst has declined an ABC News request for an interview. But in a sworn affidavit shortly after his wife disappeared, he denied he ever threatened or assaulted her. Durst also denied they had ever discussed a divorce, only a formal separation. He said Kathy made up allegations of abuse in order to get more money. And he said she had, in fact, moved back in with him prior to her disappearance.
Let's go back to the last night that you saw your friend. Set the scene for me. You were having a dinner party that night.
Yes. It was a Sunday afternoon. Intermittent snow, light rain. It was cold.
It was January 31st, 1982, 3 weeks after Kathy's trip to the hospital. Kathy and Bob Durst spent Saturday together at the cottage overlooking Lake Truesdale in South Salem. But that Sunday, Kathy showed up at Gilberta's home in Newtown, Connecticut, an hour's drive away.
She came to the house, was visibly upset. Bob would call the house, I want you home now. She didn't want to go. And the last conversation that I had with Kathy, was a very powerful conversation. And as she was leaving my house, she turned to me and said, Gilberta, promise me, if something happens to me, you'll check it out. I'm afraid of what Bobby might do.
I mean, she left your house that night and you never saw her again.
That is correct. Something happened to Kathy, and I'm going to keep my promise.
And she'll try her best, but that promise won't be easy to keep. When we come back...
She picked up the phone and called the New York State Police, tried to report her missing.
But while she was calling police...
Neighbors observing and throwing away her personal effects, her books. Well, wait a minute, what do you know that we don't know?
Stay with us.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
For more than 20 years, Robert Durst has denied having anything to do with his wife's disappearance. He told police he last saw Kathy when he put her on a train in South Salem, bound for New York City, and never saw her again. And yet, as time went by, the police began to discover inconsistencies in Durst's story about what happened that final weekend. Once again, Cynthia McFadden.
No one disputes that Kathy arrived in South Salem, but many who were close to Kathy doubt that she ever left there, at least not alive. It wasn't until the next night that Kathy's friends realized something was not right. It was Monday, February 1st, 1982, and Kathy was supposed to meet Gilberta in Greenwich Village.
I'm sitting at the bar, had Bloody Mary, no Kathy. I go to the phone, I call the penthouse, leave a message. No Kathy. I could not understand why Kathy would leave me sitting there knowing I had come all the way in from Connecticut.
I mean, it was uncharacteristic, I take it, for her to have stood you up.
Yes.
Had it ever happened before in the many years of your friendship?
No. No. I can say most assuredly that Kathy was very reliable.
After 3 days of unanswered messages, Gilberta says she finally got a call back from Bob Durst on Thursday afternoon. 4 days after Kathy vanished.
All he kept saying was, I don't know where she is. So I hang up the phone, and now I'm having this major revelation. The red flags went off, and I know something's wrong. Probably the first person I called was Kathy Traceman.
I felt something was wrong, and it was only weeks before that Kathy had expressed to me that if anything happened to me, Bob is responsible.
The last time I spoke to her, she said, if anything happens to me, you've got to promise that you won't let him get away with it.
Eleanor, if anything ever happens to me, don't let Bobby get away with it.
I just, out of instinct, picked up the phone and called the New York State Police, tried to report her missing.
And?
They wouldn't hear it. Are you family? I said, no, I'm not family. I'm her best friend, and I'm telling you that something's wrong, this woman's missing, and we need to go to the house in South Salem. We need to go now. Well, I'm sorry, ma'am, but you're not the family. You can't report her missing.
But the rest of her family didn't know Kathy was missing until Bob Durst called later that Thursday night.
And it was Jim. You know, he had this kind of a monotone voice when he talked. Have you seen Kathy? What's it like? How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Have you seen Kathy? I go, No, Bob, what's going on?
Finally, on Friday, nearly 5 full days after Kathy vanished, her husband reported her missing at Manhattan's 20th Precinct. Detective Michael Strzok says Robert Durst told him he'd not spoken with his wife since Sunday night.
That would excite any detective at that point. You know, how come you haven't, why are you here after 5 days?
What was his state? I mean, was he worried, excited, frantic, calm?
Passive would be a good word, I think. He was calm. Essentially, he said that he had delivered her to a train station on Sunday, and he did call her later that evening after he put her on the train, and that he never speaks to her again.
What was your gut reaction? Do you remember it?
Well, it seemed bizarre. I mean, you know, you're coming here 5 days later after you've spoken to your wife. But he went on to explain to me how she would very often go to take these clinical studies at various hospitals and would remain in their dorms or wherever they stay for days at a time. So it seemed reasonable to me at that point.
Her friends would later tell Detective Strzok otherwise, that Kathy regularly kept Bob informed of her whereabouts. But that first evening, Detective Strzok stuck to the standard questions. How was the marriage? Did they fight?
He said to me that their marriage was pretty good.
Within days, Strzok would discover from Durst himself that wasn't true. And police sources say there were other problems with Durst's story, like the phone call he says he made from South Salem to Kathy in Manhattan later that night.
And then upon further questioning from the state police, Bob changed his story that he didn't talk to her on the phone from the South Salem house. He changed his story.
You suspect because it wasn't on his phone bill?
Yes, exactly. He said he took the dog for a walk and used a payphone.
But the nearest payphone was a 3-mile walk on that rainy, cold night. And according to police sources, another part of Durst's story didn't check out. Durst told them he had a drink with neighbors after dropping Kathy at the train, but the neighbors told the local police that wasn't true.
Does that strike you as strange?
Sitting here today, sure.
The neighbors say they didn't see Robert Durst at all that night, although they did recall seeing a light coming from a crawl space under his house the next evening. Meanwhile, other odd reports, both in South Salem and New York, that Robert Durst, within days of her disappearance, was throwing out Kathy's clothes and textbooks.
Neighbors observing him throwing away her personal effects, her books, and like, well, wait a minute, what do you know that we don't know?
To throw away textbooks that she's currently using, her clothes, that she's, her current clothes. I mean, these do not seem like the acts of a grieving husband.
No, it sounds like a guy that's pissed off. Sounds like a guy who's fed up as well. You know, I mean, he could be throwing his hands up as well, saying good riddance to you as well.
Or like a guy who knows she's not coming back.
Sure, take your pick.
Coming up, police begin to track down leads, and not all of them point to Robert Durst.
We canvassed buildings, we spoke to witnesses.
Even witnesses who say they saw Kathy.
I felt real strong that she did make it to Manhattan at some point.
Was it possible she was still alive? Stay with us.
After Kathy Durst disappeared, the police were faced with conflicting stories. Robert Durst denied involvement, but there were inconsistencies in his story and reports from neighbors that he had thrown out her belongings within days of her disappearance. But to find out what happened to Kathy, the police needed something tangible. Here again, Cynthia McFadden.
What Detective Strzok was combing the city for was evidence, not innuendo.
We canvassed buildings, we spoke to witnesses, we spoke to school faculty.
He thought he could prove Kathy was alive when he found witnesses whose accounts seemed to place Kathy in Manhattan late Sunday night or Monday morning. An elevator operator thought he saw Kathy with a strange man that night. The police released a composite sketch. The building superintendent thought he saw Kathy the next morning. But 20 years later, sources tell ABC News, both witnesses are now unsure. The elevator man now thinks he was wrong, and the building super now says it was her coat he thought he recognized from the back, half a block away.
Well, things would change, but they were adamant on their recollection at that time, and I'm speaking to these people within days.
In this case, when you got these initial reports from the building, which after all, Mr. Durst's family owns, you must have been suspicious.
Well, yeah. Could they be facilitating him in some way? Sure. But then comes along the dean from the school.
For Detective Strzok, what cinched it was the dean at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, where Kathy attended medical school. The dean told police he'd received a phone call from a woman identifying herself as Kathy Durst Monday morning when she called in sick.
At least initially, it appears to you she's made it back to New York.
Mm-hmm. I felt real strong that she did make it to Manhattan at some point, yeah.
After waiting 5 days to report his wife missing, her husband hit the headlines as a hero, putting up a reported $100,000 reward. Durst was quoted as saying, "I think Kathy's alive. She was unhappy. All I want to know is that she's someplace and she's all right." But Detective Strzok says Bob Durst's story to him was changing from what he first described as a good marriage to a new picture of a troubled, unfaithful Kathy.
He tells me she has difficulty with alcohol, the drug issues or relationships outside the marriage. These things start to come forward as we go in the investigation.
That she's having an extramarital affair?
He said at the time he suspected that.
And helping paint this new picture was Bob's close friend, Susan Berman. In a sworn affidavit used in a surrogate hearing on Kathy's estate, Berman described the Kathy Durst she knew. Severe emotional problems, an alcohol abuser. She implied Kathy was using cocaine and said that just before Kathy vanished, she was hysterical about medical school.
I mean, this must have fueled a sense at the time it was possible she'd left.
You know, whether she had taken off with somebody or just was sick of her relationship with her husband or met her own demise. There was a whole mixed bag of things that we were entertaining on a daily basis.
Kathy's friends believe that Robert Durst and his friend Susan Berman were deliberately trying to discredit Kathy, perhaps to divert the police investigation. They insist Kathy had no serious drug or alcohol problems and that while both she and Robert had been unfaithful, she was not seriously involved with anyone. As for medical school, officials there tell ABC News that although she had missed some classes, Kathy was fully expected to graduate in 3 months.
Kathy's friends say they repeatedly told Detective Strzok what Kathy had said about Bob's violent behavior. But they say Detective Strzok did not seem to take them seriously.
It's not fact. You can't just run off and indict somebody because, you know, there's been a push or a slap or a punch or a bad relationship.
Some of her friends have told me they were upset that they had called and said they had more information and that you hadn't pursued
it. Well, things were becoming redundant after a while. I mean, there was no fact witnesses.
For Detective Strzok, it came down to having no solid evidence of foul play.
No crime scene. No body. No blood. Missing person. Then, now.
And soon, says Detective Strzok, they would have no cooperation from the husband. That is, as soon as Robert Durst hired a powerful New York attorney, Nicholas Scapetta.
I'm sure you've heard the jargon. You don't want people to lawyer up.
In fact, once Mr. Scapetta is hired, do you ever talk to Bob Durst again?
No.
Is there anything in retrospect you wish you'd done then?
Not really. If I would have been that much more aggressive towards an individual, and let's say Mr. Durst, I don't think that would have changed things. I'm speaking to an individual that comes to me 5 days after 5 days after anybody has seen her. A lot could happen during that time.
So push as hard as you might. The fact is, by the time the police knew that this disappearance and or slash murder had taken place, whoever did it had a long time to cover their tracks.
Yeah, I guess that's fair to say, sure.
And it would be a long time before the next big clue. When we come back, 18 years after Kathy disappeared, Susan Berman is murdered, right before she's about to answer questions about Robert Durst.
I was filled with terror because what I had been saying all along, that Sue Berman was the key to this case, most likely was true. And now the woman was dead.
Stay with us.
You might think that if a family had extraordinary wealth, they would use their resources to search for a missing loved one. But if Robert Durst and his family were trying hard to find Kathy, her brother Jim says they weren't telling him about it. Years later, Jim McCormick was still rankled by what he called the lack of support shown to his family by Robert's father, Seymour Durst. Here with the conclusion of our story, Cynthia McFadden.
So Mr. Durst never said to you, whatever you need, I'm here.
No, no way, no way. And I've always found it offensive that, you know, him being a contemporary of my mom in terms of, you know, the, you know, father and the mother of the two parties involved, that he never reached out to her, not once.
Robert Durst says he hired private investigators to look into Kathy's disappearance. But if they turned up anything, police sources say it was never turned over to them. Meanwhile, Kathy's family and friends worry that the police investigation itself was less than thorough.
There's been the implication that you and the police backed off from this because of who he was, because he was a member of the Durst family. True?
Why?
Powerful guy. Rich family. Political connections.
Doesn't make sense. We're under a microscope the minute something like this comes out. I don't remember anybody ever doing the amount of work on a missing persons case as we've done.
Detective Strzok worked the case for 3 more years until he retired. In the intervening years, nothing much happened until 1998, when that tip came in from an accused criminal trying to make a deal. The tipster said he'd heard that Kathy Durst never made it to the train that Sunday night and was buried somewhere in Westchester County. Police sources say the tip didn't pan out, but it did prompt another look at the case and also spurred Gilberta back into action.
I did this piece with People magazine, and I allowed myself to be photographed for one reason. I wanted Mr. Durst to open up the magazine and know that Gilberta had come back, and that I wanted him to look at me and say, "Oh my God, she's talking."
3 weeks after the article came out, Susan Berman was murdered. The police called Gilberta with the news.
I was speechless. I couldn't move, I couldn't breathe, I couldn't talk. I was filled with terror because what I had been saying all along, that Sue Berman was the key to this case, most likely was true. And now the woman was dead.
Susan Berman getting murdered is, you know, why I'm here now, because I didn't want anything to happen to Gilberta. And I also think that there's too many things that don't add up.
Well, I'm just not very much for coincidence. It would certainly stimulate me if I was spearheading this case today.
A spokesman for the LAPD told us they were aware of the Durst angle and believes it deserves attention in the Berman investigation.
It is ironic that just at the point as your investigators feel they're now ready to confront Susan Berman, she's murdered.
It's more than ironic. It's shocking. It's disturbing. It's frustrating. Because if someone is being silenced because they might have had information, we will find out what that information was.
One of the things investigators wanted to know was if Susan Berman knew anything about the mysterious phone call to the medical school dean.
Was it Kathy Durst that made the phone call to the dean?
Do I believe it now?
Yeah. Gut.
No.
Some other female made that call.
That would be one variable, yeah.
Susan Berman?
I won't go there.
If it was Susan Berman helping Robert Durst cover up what happened, would she have told the police? Berman's friend, Julie Smith, doesn't think so.
When she told me about Kathleen Durst's disappearance, I asked her flat out, do you think Bobby did it? And she said, absolutely not. He didn't do it. And that is the story she told me about that. If in her heart she believed differently, she would never in a million years have ratted Bobby out. Not for any reason.
Really? Mm-hmm. Why are you so certain of that?
She had that mob loyalty. Bobby was her friend, and he was her friend for life.
Investigators also wanted to ask Berman about $50,000 Robert Durst gave her as either a gift or a loan within months of her murder. But Berman's friend Kim Langford says this was normal for Berman, who borrowed money from many of her friends.
That's what she would do. She'd borrow money, and she always was just vigilant about paying it back.
And Langford insists there was nothing strange about receiving money from their mutual friend, Bob Durst.
The bottom line is he loved Susan, and she loved him. Bobby has always been so nice and good.
And as to his possible role in his wife's disappearance?
Bobby had nothing to do with it. And that, to me, remained true and still remains true. I don't think Bobby would kill an aunt. He's a very, very sensitive person.
Do you actually believe that Bob Durst was capable of murder?
I don't think he was capable of premeditated murder, but I think that, you know, what I envision happening is that they had a fight and he hit her and she hit her head on the fireplace and died, and then he went into a panic about what to do. And that's why I really feel that someone else would have to know what happened, because I don't think he would be capable of disposing of a body so well that it's never found.
And that may have been where Susan Berman came in.
Possibly.
Your sister has been gone for a long time now.
Yes.
Do you consider your sister missing or murdered?
Murdered. I'm 99.9%, if not 100% sure she was murdered.
As you sit here today, do you believe that Kathy Durst has been murdered?
It would be hard to think otherwise.
Did you think that at the time?
No.
Is Robert Durst a suspect?
We're not ruling him in and we're not ruling him out. He certainly was a person who had the most information about Kathleen Durst.
Well, he's also not cooperating with you, I understand.
Right.
Isn't that a bit odd? A man's wife is missing for 20 years, and he won't even give you an interview?
Well, you know, people have the right not to cooperate with us and not to speak because, for whatever reason, but that really isn't for me to say.
Robert Durst is not cooperating with police and prosecutors, but still, they have remained busy. Forensic testing has been done on portions of the South Salem home, and nearby Lake Truesdale has been dragged. But the question remains, if Kathy Durst is dead, what happened to her body? Sources say police investigators are looking south to a location on the Jersey Shore, a place you've probably never heard of.
Ship Bottom, New Jersey. Any relevance to this case?
Perhaps.
Kathy Durst disappeared in the middle of the winter. Hard to bury a body in upstate New York that time of year.
True.
Is the terrain in Ship Bottom different than that?
Sandy soil. Sandy soil doesn't hold water. Doesn't freeze.
Police sources say that collect calls were made from a payphone in Ship Bottom, New Jersey, back to the Durst Organization headquarters in New York 2 days after Kathy's disappearance.
Could this be the perfect crime?
There's no such thing as the perfect crime. With advanced technology, with DNA, with people who have an interest in speaking now who might not have spoken 20 years ago, I have confidence in the system. I believe that sooner or later we will solve this case.
But if she is to get to the bottom of it all, it will apparently be without the help of Robert Durst. We have tried to contact Mr. Durst through his attorney in New York, but both his lawyer and he have declined our numerous requests for an interview. The closest we could get to Robert Durst was his office answering machine.
Automatic voice message system.
Robert Durst?
Is not available.
At a seaside community in northernmost California. But it is another body of water that may have drawn him. New York State police were called with a report he was seen standing on the dock of the South Salem home he once shared with Kathy.
She was very vibrant. She was very vivacious. She was very beautiful. She was very intelligent. She was very warm and very caring. And the world lost something when we lost Kathy.
This is Deborah Roberts with an update to this story. For years, there was little apparent movement in the disappearance of Kathy Durst or the murder of Susan Berman. Then in 2015, an HBO documentary on Durst's life ended with an off-camera comment by Robert Durst that many interpreted to be self-incriminating in the deaths of both women. The L.A. District Attorney's Office charged Durst with first-degree murder in Susan Berman's death, saying the timing was coincidental, not related to the documentary. Durst was convicted in 2021. Meanwhile, Kathy Durst was declared legally dead in 2017. And in 2021, New York officials charged Durst in her murder, too. But Robert Durst never saw trial in Kathy's case. He died in a California prison in 2022. Thanks for listening to the 2020 True Crime Vault. Tune in Friday nights at 9 for all new broadcast episodes of 2020 on ABC.